You think you are a long-term fundamental investor and that investment and trading rules don't apply to you. Well, no, you're not, and yes, they do.
Okay.
Welcome to Future Skills, where we prepare you for a future of accelerating change. I'm Ludvig Sundström.
And I'm Mikael Syding.
Today, we're going to talk about the biggest stock market newbie mistakes, according to Mikael's list.
Let's start with number 10. You celebrate high prices. It sounds like a good thing, right?
Well, more is always better.
Yeah, you have your stock portfolio and the prices are going up. They are really high. Why wouldn't you be glad? The reason is that you're probably not done buying. You still have an income and you're still an investor. You really should celebrate lower prices so that you are able to buy more shares for your money.
I think there's also one thing to think about there. When we say low and high prices.
Yeah, you mean we're really talking about low and high valuations.
Yeah.
And that means that you want to be able to buy things at a low valuation, because a low valuation means a higher margin of safety. It means that given that there is a certain future for this company's cash flows, if you buy at a low valuation, at a low price, you will get a higher return, everything else equal.
Okay, so moving on to the next one.
The noob mistake here is that you actually listen to company managers and brokers. And why shouldn't you? They have the best information. Don't they?
Well, they're wearing suits and ties.
Well, that you're right on the money there.
I think a really great book that I borrowed from you like a year ago was the one. Wait, what's it called now? The stock broke. The guy who quit.
Oh yeah,
the London guy,
Geraint Anderson.
Yeah, did you know
City Boy?
City Boy. Yeah, that one. That's a really funny book, and we recommend it. And it's a really funny book about how brokers basically trick people and make money on the stock market.
It's weirdly underappreciated. I mean, it should be as famous and as appreciated as Lewis's books, like Flash Boys, for example. But yeah, City Boy, I think, is a real gem out there in terms of financial literature. Anyway, no, management and brokers are not your friends, and they are not in the business of handing out truths or facts. They are salesmen. They have a completely different incentive than to give you the right information and make sure that you buy cheaply with a margin of safety. They are in the business of making commission, or in case of management, they are in the business of making the company as expensive as possible, and really for you to buy the shares as expensively as possible.
Yeah, it's not an objective, informal information presentation. It's a very carefully devised sales pitch.
Fuck the Wall Street brokers.
Next, and is that you talk about single year key ratios. Like, you've probably heard people talk about price earnings or price sales or price book, etc. And it's like, do you know what the PE of this company is? You should say the PE based on what E, which year's E, and whose E. Who made that earnings forecast, and for what year are we talking about? Or is it an average for several years? So if you or anybody else is talking about the price earnings ratio for the year 2020, it might not have any bearing whatsoever on the actual value or value creation power of the company, because that year might very well not be representative at all of the long-term series of cash flows that actually make up the value of the company.
Okay, so it's just an anchoring point then.
Yeah, it's the thing here is that it's extremely easy to talk about just a single year multiple, valuation multiple, like the price earnings ratio. It's very easy to understand what it means. I mean, if the PE for next year's profit is 10, it just means that you need 10 of those years to make your money back. It's really intuitive to understand, and that's why people use it, and that's why people talk about key ratios like that. But it doesn't say anything about the year after that. What profits will they make then? Are they in a certain product life cycle? Did they make extraordinary gains this year, or the other way around? Maybe had higher costs that will not recur next year. There are a lot of factors that mean that just a single year might not be relevant at all for the sum total of the company.
Yeah, so you're saying get a fuller picture and try to understand the context.
Exactly. So you actually really need to make a true analysis. There is a guy called Schiller, And he has a key ratio that he calculates for entire stock markets. And it's called either the cyclically adjusted price earnings ratio, or CAPE, or just the Shiller PE ratio. And it takes the last 10 years price earnings ratios and makes an inflation adjusted average for those. And that cancels out the business cycle. And the CAPE, or the Shiller PE, it's way more accurate in terms of trying to assess whether you're buying cheaply or expensively. That's because that's a 10-year average rather than just a single year key ratio.
Yeah, I remember when we did the episode, I think it was number 26, about the online tools that we use. And then we talked about that, and we also talked about inflation calculators, some basic stuff like that.
Yeah, I think we talked about the importance of verifying numbers also, and just making sure that you don't rely on just one single key ratio or one single figure.
Okay, so let's move on to the next one.
You scream of joy when one strategic investor is selling to another investor, or rather when one strategic investor is buying from another investor.
Could you give an example of this?
If Warren Buffett buys a large stake from, let's say, BlackRock.
Okay, so we're talking about key players that everyone knows about.
Yeah, you have two key players. And the problem here is that most people tend to focus on the buyer because he's the one ending up with the shares. So if Warren Buffett buys a large strategic stake in a company, then most people tend to think that this is really, really good. I mean, Warren Buffett, he knows what he's doing. All right. But what about BlackRock? They've had the stake for several years. They've been involved in the board. They know every in and out of the company, and they are selling. So what's their agenda, and why do you think that they don't know what they're doing? So I just think you shouldn't just reflexively think about the buyer and that's a good thing. You really should think about the seller who probably knows more about the company than the buyer, since they are on the inside.
How about institutional investors? When they buy and sell, should you think they are stupid or smart?
I would normally call them stupid money. It really depends on who's selling. I'm not saying it's a bad thing that somebody is buying. I mean, it's always a good thing that somebody is buying. But I'm just saying that it's a newbie mistake to think that it can only be good, because this is a large, probably knowledgeable player in general, and they have decided to make a large investment in this company. I mean, sure, yeah, it's good, but I'm just saying it's not unequivocally good. Because there is another side of the coin as well, and you should look that up before screaming of joy.
Understood. Okay. So let's go on to the next one, then, number three.
It's about using the present tense when you talk about the stock market. So for example, people tend to say stuff like, the market is going up. Well, this is something that my professors told me when I was in business school, that sure, the market has gone up. It has risen. That's all we know. We can never know for sure whether the next tick will be upward or downward. So you can't really say it's going up. I don't adhere to the efficient market hypothesis, EMH.
Obviously not if you were in a hedge fund.
No, but I still think that the market generally moves randomly and that it reflects reality, and reality is inherently random. Sure, there are short-term trends, but the thing with these trends is that you never know when they break, and therefore you really can't say stuff like it's going up. You can only say it right up until this point. The market is higher now than it was at a certain point before. And the problem is that you tend to fool yourself if you use the wrong language.
Okay, if you're Warren Buffett or if you're Jimmy Buffett, nobody knows if a stock is going to go up, down, sideways, or in fucking circles. Least of all stockbrokers.
Final main point here on the list of noob mistakes is that you think a positive story is all the stock needs.
Well, it seems to be working quite well recently in the last few years.
Yeah, and people like stories. The human condition is about a narrative. I mean, we would hardly even exist without some kind of a narrator or a narrative telling us why we even are individuals, why we even exist, because we we really don't exist. We are just like points in time and situations in time. But then we have this conscious self that creates a narrative and creates a self really out of nothing.
It's a very persistent illusion.
Yeah, definitely. But really is no self and no time. So this is just a simulation and like a virtual reality rendering of whatever facts might be out there. But the brain really isn't, or the conscious self really doesn't care about facts. So why would the stock market be any different? The thing is that the narrative can change at any time, but the facts stay the same. So what you... Of course, you can be a momentum investor. You can just try to latch on to whatever narrative is on vogue right now. And you try to stick with that trend and you hope to be able to sell to a bigger fool and get off the train when the trend turns. But if you are more value-oriented, like I am, then a story that's just saying that, well, because of the environment, we need electric cars, so you'd better buy Tesla, no matter what the valuation is. That's the way that I just can't sign off on.
Right, I understand. I think you could draw parallel to when we were talking to Martin Sandqvist for the Swedish podcast, 25 minuter. I don't know how long time ago this was exactly, but I do remember it was around the time when Bitcoin was peaking and he was being skeptical and got a lot of bullshit. People like got angry at him for that. But he was like, nope, there's no inherent value here. Let's move on.
Yeah, he was very steadfast and he was it after like a 2,000% rise in a year.
Yeah, he you could say that if you're going by momentum, he picked the worst moment to say what he said. But he turned out he was right.
Yeah.
And I think that's a funny example of this.
All right. I seem to jump the gun. It's the next one that is the final main point.
Oh.
And it's that you think you are a long-term fundamental investor and that investment and trading rules don't apply to you.
And?
Well, no, you're not. And yes, they do.
Okay.
There is a reason we have market peaks and market troughs. And it's that at the peaks, like when you talked about Bitcoin, that's when everybody and their dog just need to be in on it. They can't stand seeing their neighbors getting rich. And so you let greed get the better of you. And the same thing goes when markets are falling. You start out by saying, no, I'm a long-term investor. I'll just stick to this. Over the long term, I will make the most money if I just stay put and keep buying and holding. Then things keep going down and more people are selling. And sooner or later, you're there with the nursing a loss of 75% and you just think that I just can't afford to lose anymore. I mean, what do I really know? And you start doubting yourself and sooner or later, you're one of the ones just jumping ship. That is exactly what creates a trough. So no matter what you think that you will do, the likelihood is much higher that you are like most people and that you sell at the worst possible time and buy at the worst possible time.
However, what could be like an antidote for this to actually be a long-term investor? A long-term fundamental investor.
Oh, that's a difficult thing.
Might be a scope for another episode.
Yeah, I think so. And, I mean, this is really human psychology at its worst. This is what we do. We are herding, we just want to do what everybody else is doing.
And I think if you go back to the second thing we talked about, I mean, the last thing we talked about narrative, the second worst mistake here. I think that's just going to keep increasing. And we recently talked to Seth Godin, who is one of the biggest experts in the world on marketing. He's been in the Marketing Hall of Fame and the Direct Marketing Hall of Fame, which is pretty big titles. And he's also written 13 best-selling books and so forth. And what he told us is that the biggest difference between a pro marketer and an amateur marketer now these days is the ability to understand what makes for a really good story and how it spreads. And that's marketing is about so many things, but he said that was the most important. And I think marketing and finance is becoming intertwined in a way it wasn't just 20 years ago because of this global village phenomenon where a story can just take off and it becomes so, the distribution is so weird and unpredictable. Like you can have 1,000 stories and then everyone's going to know it. But like how Elon Musk is going to save the world or how Apple computers was about rebels and stuff like that. Those stories catch on. But then you have 998 stories that are are to most people probably about the same, but no one knows them.
Yeah, this boils down to survivorship bias as well. You only see the stories that survive, and the most viral stories, they just kill off all the other stories.
Yeah, and they just keep going. You could almost draw parallel to our discussion about Bitcoin, where the interesting thing there, I think, is why didn't the Bitcoin mania just keep going on? Why did it stop like that, you know?
Really hard to say, but on the other hand...
Exactly, but I mean, it's interesting.
Yeah, there's been like 4 or 5 Bitcoin bull markets that were more or less equally parabolic, like up 10 or 20 times, and then down by some, like more or less 80%. So this was just the 4th or 5th repetition. And every time people think that this time is when it's going to a million, when it's going up.
But are the stories the exact same all the time? Or?
Yeah, more or less, more or less.
So people just have a short-term memory then?
Yeah, it's but then again, Bitcoin really has no intrinsic value. I will not get into a discussion here of whether it has value or not, or use case, or comparing it to gold or fiat currencies. But it's still true that there is no tangible value to Bitcoin. And that makes it a much more potent speculative asset than stocks, for example.
Okay, so I think we have to close this episode now before we get too out of hand. So you can find this list of the most common stock market newbie mistakes at Mikael's blog if you search for it. And you can find our summary of it in the newsletter that we send out weekly, which is at futureskillspodcast.com. And you can just join the newsletter or check the show notes for that.
Thank you, Alex Martin, for editing the sound in this episode. And don't forget to leave a review on iTunes. Thank you.
Thanks and goodbye.